But let's look at that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnanata Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmain Shri Gurave Namaha. Okay, so we have text 20 on page 587. Pakritim Purusham Chaiva Vidyanadi Ubhavapi Vikramascha Gunamschaiva Vidi Prakriti Sambhavan Prakritim material nature Purusham the living entities Cha also Eva certainly Vidhi you must know. Anadi. Oh, there's the word, anadi. Without beginning. Ubau. Both. Api. Also. Vikaran. Transformations. Cha. Also. Gunan. The three modes of nature. Cha, also. Eva, certainly. Vidhi, no. Prakriti, material nature. Sambhavan, produced of. Deepak Prabhu, could you read? Because you really have an announcer's voice. But we need you to use the mic. Translation and purport.
Material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformation and the modes of matter are products of material nature. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. By the knowledge given in this chapter, one can understand the body, the field of activities, and the knowers of the body, both the individual soul and the super soul. The body is the field of activity and is composed of material nature. The individual soul that is embodied and enjoying the activities of the body is the Purusha, or is the living entity. He is one knower and the other is the super soul. Of course, it is to be understood that both the super soul and the individual entity are different manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity is in the category of his energy, and the super soul is in the category of his personal expansion. Both material nature and the living entity are eternal. That is to say that they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so also are the living entities. But the living entities are of superior energy. Both the living entities and material nature existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of the Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That's the mystery of this material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within the material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature.
Please read that again.
It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature.
One more time. It's just nectar to my ears.
It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature.
Hmm.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place.
Oh, once more.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place.
One more time.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place.
So I'm very satisfied with that explanation. Yeah. For one, it's not important. And two, there is a reason, and Krishna knows, and maybe he'll tell us someday.
I read forward. In the scriptures of the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature and are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. But we should know it with certainty from the description of these few verses that all transformation and influence of material nature by the three modes are also productions of material nature. All transformation and variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same.
Mm. So what do you think of that?
Well, I don't really have a question of how we got here. But, mainly the question on Saturday was how to get out of here and can we? Because it started, like I was saying, with trying to imagine where we came from, but then at the same time, because in my personal understanding, you know, something where you begin, you probably want to go back there because that's where you started. And so I started thinking of how could we fall from Goloka without, you know, being able to fall from Goloka? You can't. So that was the confusion. But then at the end I was thinking, you know, it doesn't matter. If I want to go to Goloka, I have to think of how to go back to Goloka. And can I actually do that from this body, from this planet, with this consciousness and Kali Yuga and all these consequences? So that was the main issue.
Mm-hmm. So ultimately it's not important how we got here. What's important is how do we get out. But I love this purport because it does mention that there is a reason and there is a meaning to it, but it's not explained explicitly. And that's generally how the acharyas explain it, and Prabhupada's keeping with that, even though, you know, you can say that he said this here and he said that here. To me, this really sums it up. And then ultimately, you know, when we go back, maybe we'll understand. But it won't matter anyway. Okay, anything else? All right, let's go on to chapter 9 then. So let's read all the verses in chapter 9 so that we can see the whole picture of the chapter. How are we doing on time here? I can't see it because of the glare and I don't have a watch. Oh, it's 7:45. Oh. Okay. All right. So chapter 9 begins on what page? 395. So let's go around the room. Let's see. There's 34 verses in the chapter. So what if we all read one verse and we'll just keep going around. We'll just read the verses so that we see the whole picture of the chapter, and then we'll go back and read a purport.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna,
Because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence.
Text 2. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is joyfully performed.
Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world.
By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them.
I just want to point out in these two verses, 4 and 5, the philosophy of simultaneous one indifference is actually explained here by Krishna. These are the key verses that point out this. Let's just read 4 one more time.
By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them.
Mm. So that's the oneness part, right? But at the same time, it's the difference part, because everything is one, but yet Krishna is separate from it. He has his own existence.
And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation.
Jack. So he says everything's in me, but then again he says everything's not in me, because I'm separate. I have my own existence, even though everything's in me.
Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me.
Text 7. O son of Kunti, at the head of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again.
The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end.
O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral.
Text 10. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again.
Text 11. Fools deride me when I descended in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be.
Text 12. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated.
O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded...
It's just interesting to notice the progression here. So first Krishna is talking about those who are deluded. And those who are deluded, they're actually attracted to atheistic philosophies. But like earlier on, we were talking about how actually to understand that there's a Supreme Lord, to understand how he is simultaneously one and different, one who can understand that is receiving great mercy. It's the, by the mercy of the Lord that we can have this spiritual intelligence, sumedasa, as it said. And conversely, one who is adverse to the Lord, he will be bewildered and attracted to philosophies that support his position, according to this verse. And then he's saying, on the other hand, so that's verse 12. Then verse 13, it's talking about one who's not adverse to the Lord. Okay.
O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
So how do the great souls remain under the shelter of the divine energy? Yeah, by always chanting the glories, by bowing down. It's very practical, you know, how one stays under the shelter, you know. We could be, right now, all of us could be under the shelter of some TV program right now. And we would be, you know, under that influence. But now we're under the shelter of the Supreme Lord because we're hearing His direct words, and we're bowing down before Him, and we're under that influence. Very practical.
Text 15. Mm-hmm. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many and in the universal form.
But it is I who am the ritual, I am the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering.
Yeah, see, you can see at this point, Krishna's speaking very strongly to Arjuna. He's saying, you know, look, you know, there are those who are bowing down before me, and they're taking shelter of the divine energy. But then there are others, they're worshipping demigods, they're worshipping the Absolute. But he's saying, look, you know, it's me. You know, I am the ritual, I am the sacrifice. You know, I am the healing herb, I am the transcendental chant. You know, you should become a devotee.
Wake up!
Okay.
I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama and the Yajurvedas.
I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seed.
O Arjuna, I give heed and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seek the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights.
When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principle of three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death.
So this is, Krishna is making many comparisons between those who are not devotees, or devotees of demigods, or devotees of the Brahman, or direct devotees, or atheists.
Text 22. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have.
Mm. So, if you're a devotee, you know, you get special treatment. And the Lord will explain why.
Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way.
I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down.
Text 25. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such things, such beings. And those who worship me will live with me.
Text 26.
Who can argue with this, you know?
Text 26. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it.
So, you know, he's coming back again to pure bhakti, you know, just be a devotee.
Text 27. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me.
In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me.
Mm.
Text 29. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him.
So here Krishna explains, you know, why he's partial to devotees, even though that he is impartial. And now he's going to reinforce the point in a strong way.
Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination.
Hmm.
He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes.
O son of Pratha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras, can attain the supreme destination.
How much more? This is so of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engage in loving service unto me.
Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
Jai. Of course, this is the last verse in the chapter, and this is the only verse in the Bhagavad Gita that really is spoken twice. So it's a very almost the same verse in chapter 18, verse 55, I think it is. Shall we read it just to see the difference? It's very slight. It's almost exactly the same. 7:48. Okay. Yeah. So the last two lines are a little different. The first two lines are the same in Sanskrit.
Man manabhav bhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mam evashyaisya satyam te prajetit.
Okay. Put your mouth a little closer to the microphone. There you go. It's an ice cream.
Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam avashyasya satyam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Mm.
So it's even stronger emphasis, you know, that Krishna's promising. So let's just read 34 again in chapter 9, just see the subtle difference.
Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Be completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me.
So pretty much the same. And in chapter 18, in just the previous verse, Krishna tells Arjuna that he said, this is the most confidential, this is the ultimate of all the teachings. So this verse is the ultimate teaching. And also, it goes along with the next verse right after this is Sarvamidam Mam Paritya Ja, Mamekam Saranam Braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami masu chaha. Just give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. Don't worry, I'll protect you from all your sins. So they go along together. Bow down before me, become my devotee. I promise you, you'll come back to me. Just surrender unto me, give up all varieties of religion, and I'll protect you from your sins. So, out of all these verses in chapter 9, is there one particular verse someone wants to read? And we'll read the purport. Okay, 9:34. Why don't you read it? With a microphone, if you can get it.
Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi yukpaivam atmana matparayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is the absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Puran, as it is quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, in his Anubhashya comments on Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter, Adi Leela, verses 41-48. Deha dehi vibedo yam neshvare vidyate kvachit. That means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because the commentators do not know the signs of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the signs of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people.
Okay, let's just stop at this point. So, do you know which commentator Prabhupada is referring to? Do you know Navadvipa Prabhupada? Ramakrishna. So Ramakrishna says that, actually Krishna doesn't mean bow down before him. He means you should be bowing down, you should be becoming a devotee of the unborn within Krishna, the Brahman. So instead of taking the direct Sanskrit, taking Krishna's words as they are, some commentators say, no, this is actually what he means. And this is what Prabhupada is referring to here. Okay.
And if I might add also, Sarvepalli Radhakrishnan, he was one of the presidents of India. He was a scholar. And Prabhupada used his translations when he was lecturing before, in the early days of ISKCON.
Mm-hmm.
He said the translations are pretty accurate, but the purport was bogus. And one of his purports was exactly what Prabhupada is mentioning. So this might be also one of the commentators Prabhupada was referring to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There are some who are demoniac. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when will Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material, but is eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise, from the wrong source, will prove fruitless.
So, Prabhupada is telling us to avoid commentators who are manufacturing. And some people who comment on this verse and say that Krishna doesn't mean surrender to him directly, but to the unborn within Krishna, then we'll get all confused. But if we hear Bhagavad Gita from the pure devotees, from the disciplic succession, then we'll get the right idea and we'll naturally become devotees of the Lord.
One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is the Supreme. He should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional services practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Lok. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society.
So, you know, devotional service is very active, it's very practical. It means engaging all your senses in the service of the Lord. And you know, the senses are always receiving information. Whatever the eye sees, the brain makes a little picture of it, and that gets stored away. Everything you hear, everything you smell, everything you taste, everything you touch becomes a mental impression that is there. And that affects us, that comes back. So when we bow down, when we come to the temple and we see the beautiful form of the Lord and we bow down, and we take prasadam, and we smell the incense, and we smell the flowers, and we hear the kirtan. This is all transcendental impressions that are there, actually liberating us from the material condition. The senses, when they're receiving material impressions, are basically keeping us bound in the material world. But by receiving transcendental impressions, gradually the soul becomes freed of its identification with the mind and the body. And so it's very, very practical. So Krishna says, you know, worship me, bow down before me, offer prayers to me, become my devotee. So it's not a sentimental thing, really. It's very practical.
The 7th and 8th chapters of Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by the different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and the localized Paramatma, but a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly...
I just want to stop there. So Prabhupada is mentioning the 7th and 8th chapter. So it said that the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th were all specifically about bhakti yoga. And so the other chapters in Bhagavad Gita, you know, you'll read about Astanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga. And those who aren't purified, they'll become attracted to those and think, oh, this is the main part of the Bhagavad Gita. And so the bhakti portion is in the middle of the Gita and protected from the outside. But those who are purified, and of course are following in the footsteps of the pure devotees, then they can understand that, yes, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, these are all about bhakti. And chapter 9 is in the middle of the middle. Okay.
There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of the demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who always engages in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 9th chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of most confidential knowledge.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the last paragraph, Prabhupada is basically summarizing the whole chapter, but particularly the last part of the chapter, where Krishna is explaining that those who worship the demigods will go to the planets of the demigods, but those who worship me will come to me, and then he says that even those who are lacking, if they're my devotees, I'm carrying what they lack and I preserve what they have. They won't lose whatever they've gained in devotional service, and whatever they're lacking, I will support. So be a devotee. And then he says, and then he gives the example of somebody who's very fallen, who makes a terrible mistake and apparently is exhibiting a very undevotional-like character. But that sort of person who has a fall down or has a lapse in material consciousness, Krishna is saying, be very careful. You must think of this person as a devotee. He actually calls him a sadhu. And he doesn't use that word very often in the Bhagavad Gita. So he says that someone who has become my devotee, even though his character is not perfected, he's a sadhu because, you know, he's accepted me as the goal of life. And that's very, very special, you know. And there are so many different spiritual practitioners, but they don't accept the personality of Godhead. They don't accept that there's one supreme source that I have to bow down to. They think, you know, I want to become the boss, or we're all the boss. But either way, the boss is being negated. And so one who admits, yes, there's one boss, and he's my boss, then that person is very advanced and is very special, and Krishna treats them like that appropriately. He says that this person will become rectified by my grace, and by my grace he will come back to Godhead. So very important points. So any Questions or comments before we end the class? Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premananda. So now we'll have Artik and then Prasadam. Nice to see you too.